Welcome back to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW. Heard around the state on Utah Public Radio. I'm Roger McDonough, and today on the show, quite a lot in the way of politics. Donald Trump loses support among many prominent Utah Republicans, though apparently not the support of state GOP Chairman James Evans. Meanwhile, the Deseret News calls for Trump to withdraw from the election. Plus, the continuing story of Josh Holt, a Utahn being held in a Venezuelan prison. And the State Records Committee denies a Tribune request for emails related to how Utah State University handled rape accusations against a former football player at the school. Joining me in the studio this morning, Salt Lake Tribune government reporter Robert Gerke. Hello and welcome, Robert.
Good morning.
Justice reporter Mariah Noble. Thanks for being here as well, Mariah.
Thank you.
And Tribune editorial writer George Pyle. George, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And joining us on the phone this morning, at least for the first part of the morning, is Salt Lake Tribune Washington correspondent Thomas Burr. Hi, Tommy. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Roger.
Listeners, which stories caught your attention this past week? We'd like to hear from you. You can chime in with your questions and comments by calling us at 801-355-TALK or commenting at sltrib.com. Thomas Burr, a week like none I can recall for a major party presidential candidate. A lot of fallout from comments by and accusations against Donald Trump, and a lot of that fallout coming from prominent Utah Republicans who kind of kicked off a wave of open revolt against Trump. How did this play out?
Yeah, it's been a heck of a week, that's for sure, in the political sphere. And amazing how a race can really turn in just one week, and not in the right direction for Mr. Trump. As our listeners know, this allegation started last Friday, a week ago, when a tape emerged of Donald Trump on a hot microphone saying some pretty lurid things about women, and that he would. They had no problems with going after married women or, actually just grabbing them, which I will not use the word on the air right now.
Right.
But it quickly brought rebukes from Republicans all over the country. Governor Herbert pulled his support. Congressman Jason Chaffetz pulled his support. Former Governor John Huntsman said that he can no longer support Trump and that Pence should lead the ticket. Mike Pence is vice presidential running mate.
Right.
And others as well distanced themselves from the comments, but not necessarily from the candidate, like Greg Hughes, the House Speaker, is still supporting Donald Trump. Of course, the Utah GOP chairman, James Evans, is supporting
right.
Trump.
We'll get to that.
But
yep.
the kind of exodus that happened after that really put Utah in play in so many ways, and I actually have to say, as a Utah political reporter, I never really thought I'd be covering a swing state.
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody did, and it's a remarkable year. Some Utah Republicans saying they can't vote for Trump any longer. Others, as you said, calling for Trump to bow out, for Pence to lead the ticket, or maybe somebody else. I don't know, but no wavering from Trump or from his campaign, despite the revolt going on in the party that he's representing.
Absolutely. I mean, Trump did apologize. He did issue a video, saying sorry for those who were offended, and it was locker room banter, and that's all it is. Of course, things started, piling on after that, after Sunday's debate, when Donald Trump said that the allegations were all false. He'd never done that. We see several women coming forward and saying, well, no, he did. He forcibly kissed me. He forcibly grabbed me. He was doing some other lewd things. And Trump's just doubling down on pushing back, saying this is all a media conspiracy to get Hillary Clinton elected, and these are all out-and-out lies. And the press is really, in the pocket for Clinton, and that's all it is. But he's keeping, base of his voters, for sure. Who do see this as just a conspiracy to hurt him.
But
he's losing a lot of the mainstream people, like the House Speaker Paul Ryan, who now said that he is not going to support Trump and campaign with him, do anything like that. And that's something I think is pretty unheard of in modern times, to have, your party's top leader essentially not backing the Republican nominee.
Well, and it seems, this is a very unusual year, and people jumping ship. It's doing a number on the Republican Party. You mentioned John Huntsman Jr., who is one of the people calling for Trump to withdraw, and an interesting about face there. Hadn't Huntsman only recently kind of reaffirmed his commitment to voting for Trump just maybe a week or two prior?
Yeah, week prior to, 2 weeks ago, John Huntsman actually emailed me his thoughts of why he's supporting Trump and why Trump would be better than Clinton. And that was the first person I talked to on Friday after the tape emerged, and he had instantly said, "I can't do this anymore. You know, essentially, I can't support somebody who comments like this." And noted this is already a race to the bottom in this election so far, but we're getting to the point where there seems to be no more bottom. Huntsman quickly pulled his support and said he supports Pence, but of course. People are already voting. Utahns are already voting. It's impossible to change the ballots this late in the game.
Okay. Well, a video is a tipping point, and then, of course, these allegations against him, too, and a changed race altogether. We've mentioned numerous Republicans who've said that enough is enough from their nominee, but there are those who are sticking by Trump and Robert Gerke here in studio. Among those doubling down on the candidate is GOP Chairman James Evans. He sent out a message on Monday saying that the Utah GOP was reaffirming its support of Trump. And then yesterday he appeared on CNN opposite Utah Democratic Party Chair Peter Caroon. And in this interview, Evans fired off some allegations of his own against Bill Clinton. Fill us in on what happened
right
there.
Right. Well, James is playing the loyal warrior, I guess, and so he's sticking with he's standing by his man, a Tammy Wynette song. But he's so. He was on CNN yesterday morning with Peter Caroon, and he's long held that the liberal mainstream media has it out for Trump, and they've been hammering Trump and giving Hillary a free ride. And in this particular interview, he is an example of that happening. He said that that the media needs to look into needs to interview Bill Clinton's illegitimate love child, and it references this story that made the rounds in the conservative blogs and media outlets back in the 90s that involves this young man, then a young man, now he's 30, who said that, his mother was a prostitute. Bill Clinton paid for sex on multiple occasions, more than a dozen times, and he was the product of that relationship, I guess you could say. And it was kind of dismissed at the time because there's not any evidence. There was some dispute over whether there was a DNA test done, and then it kind of went away, obviously, for 20 years almost. And now it's resurfacing again because he's active on social media. He's posted YouTube videos. He's been interviewed by these conservative news outlets. And James Evans says that, he raised this issue and said, well, why aren't you guys interviewing her or interviewing this gentleman? It's like you have a news blackout on the guy. And the CNN reporter cut him off. But James, stuck with this story and kept pushing it.
Well, and CNN, the CNN anchor, Carol Costello, dismissed it out of hand. And I guess, others have said this is essentially a conspiracy theory, and you talk about there being little evidence, but he's sticking by that story. I mean, most news outlets, I would say, I don't know, maybe Robert, you having dug into this, have dismissed this these kinds of allegations in the past. And I guess, does it even really matter, an attack on on the, what would it be, the first spouse versus...
Well, that was one of the questions I asked him. It's like, we kind of know Bill Clinton has a history, so, and I think people accept that, and it comes with the territory with the guy. And does it matter? I mean, I asked him that, and he says, well, it tells us a lot about the Clintons as a couple and as a pair, because you're getting a pair of Clintons if you elect Hillary. Other news outlets have kind of dug into this. Again, it's getting a lot of traction, especially in the last couple of weeks in the tabloid and right-wing media. National media has kind of... dismissed it, I guess, because there's very little proof. This gentleman has done some time in prison, and it's hard to prove this beyond unless you get a DNA test, I guess.
Okay, so he's also getting James Evans is getting some criticism, nationally, but also locally. There are some who are even calling for him to resign as GOP party chair here in Utah.
Yeah. The Alliance for Better Utah did issue a statement yesterday saying that he should step down because he's unfit to be the party chairman.
A question that I have is with so many prominent Republicans in Utah Republicans ditching Trump, is it unexpected to have the head of the Republican Party in Utah still endorsing him, still backing him.
I don't think so. I think he's kind of obligated to, you know, captain goes down with the ship, I guess. So I think he's kind of obligated to stay on the Trump train. You know, he does have to walk a fine line, though, because you have elected officials on, you know, major elected officials, as Tommy mentioned, on both sides of this issue. You've got the Mike Lees and the Mia Loves and the, you know, and the Gary Herberts on, you know, who've abandoned him. And then you've got the people who are sticking with him. And so he's got to kind of try to navigate both sides of that, as he's put it, thread the needle on, you know, where the state party officially should be.
George Pyle, your comments on this, on the sort of, you know, continuing split in the Republican Party.
Well, it was interesting. I mean, to me, it was like this tape that came out and all of a sudden all these people broke away from him. Where have they been for 18 months? I mean, this guy hasn't said anything that wasn't offensive ever, and he said most of it on tape. And the idea that it came down to this one thing, and what's interesting about it is that some people seem to be just offended by the language he used, right, not really going to the point that he's describing assault. I mean, even when they refer to it like as lewd or something, that's not lewd. I mean, he's talking about assault. He's talking about a crime. Hmm. If you're just going to make some remark about what a woman looks like, that can be lewd. When you're saying, I'm a star and I can do anything I want and you should aspire to be like me because look what I get to do. And because he used a kind of a vulgarism, everybody's going, oh, I can't support him anymore because he used that word.
See, I don't know, George. I kind of disagree because I think that this is something that, yes, he's said offensive things before and people have said that he's said offensive things before. But this was in such graphic terms in his own voice. And as you mentioned, this is talking about something that would be sexual assault, not just sort of derogatory terms. And I just think that, you know, and it was a tipping point for a lot of people who already maybe weren't like sold on, you know, people like, yeah, Governor Herbert, who weren't necessarily sold on him before. But yeah, I mean, the graphic terms, the graphic nature of this actually matters, and I think hearing it in Trump's own voice actually, you know, was shocking to some
and
people.
It is. I mean, a lot of the people who are withdrawing their support now were pretty iffy before. I mean, like Governor Herbert would say things like, "Well, I'm voting for Mike Pence," and of course, a lot of people are probably voting for Gary Herbert because they like his running mate. So you know, it goes around, and. So, yeah, I can understand why this might be a tipping point.
Sure.
And then there are other people who say, look, he's our party's nominee. It's my job to stick with him. It's too late to change. I mean, probably the only thing they could do if they would decide as a party to get rid of him or Trump would step down and go start his own TV news network, which is probably the end point of all this anyway, is they could say, okay, go ahead and vote for Trump, but then we'll instruct our electors from each state in the Electoral College. We'll either give them their head or we'll tell them all to vote for Pence and you'll all know what you're getting and you can go ahead and do that. But that would require, you know, a lot of people to go in and vote for somebody that they don't really want to vote for and then take their word for the fact that it'll turn out this way when there's no reason that it has to turn out that way.
Well, and people looking, if anybody was looking for an excuse to get out or withdraw their support, here was a ready-made opportunity, an October surprise, a legitimate,
yes,
October surprise.
Really.
We're going to dig into the story just a little bit further. On Saturday, the LDS church-owned Deseret News also called on Trump to withdraw from the race, citing what it called the, quote, hucksterism, misogyny, narcissism, and latent despotism of the Trump campaign. George Pyle, Salt Lake Tribune editorial writer, what's the significance of the Deseret News coming out against the Republican Party nominee in Utah?
Well, the Deseret News does not endorse political candidates. As far as I know, they never have. There are a lot of reasons for that. The Deseret News is owned by the church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and so they want to avoid even any appearance that the church might be supporting candidates. Plus, there also might be an issue of the church's tax-exempt status. If you have tax-exempt status as a charity, as a church, you're not supposed to be endorsing or favoring or disfavoring candidates. So you can put your tax exemption at risk doing that. But this was an extraordinary step. I mean, they said in the editorial, we don't endorse candidates, but we just can't support this person in any way, shape, or form. He should step aside. He should leave the ticket. he should not be one of the ones that the American people have a choice of running for president.
Well, it's the first time in 80 years that the Deseret News has weighed in on a presidential race. We should note that while the editorial was a rebuke of Trump, it wasn't, obviously, as he said, endorsing Clinton.
It was not an endorsement of Clinton. But I think the other thing that's really interesting about that editorial is my understanding is, and from what I know about how the Deseret News operates, those editorials, especially an editorial that would be that noteworthy and that gained that much attention, is typically approved at church headquarters. It's reviewed by church officials. So when you see that in the Deseret News, it's not just the Deseret News that's saying that. This is coming from the church headquarters.
And I know that I think it was Matt Canham or maybe yourself who asked, or Tommy, it could have been you, who asked the Deseret News, somebody at the Deseret News, if they had consulted with the church. They said, no, this is the newspaper by itself on its own.
You're correct that I think it was Matt Canham actually reported that, but in the end, does that matter to voters in Utah who are Mormon? They see that as almost a wink and a nod, it would seem, even if the church leaders didn't have a say in what the Deseret News editorial was saying. At the end of the day, that's what they take from it.
I want to send out a quick reminder to our listeners that you can join this conversation. We'd be happy to field your questions. Call us at 801-355-8255. Before we go to our first break, I have one. I want to go just a little bit deeper into the story on hot on the heels of this, you know, mass defection from the Trump campaign and after everything else that happened here in Utah. Yesterday, Hillary Clinton's running mate, Virginia Governor Tim Kaine, appeared on a local television station, ABC4. Tommy Burr, does the Clinton campaign see a potential win in Utah?
They do, actually. And if nothing else, they see a Trump loss. So they're making a play. They released, they have already had a Mormons for Hillary, you know, group, but then they made a campaign ad to circulate online. They're doing rallies. And the fact they're putting the running mate on, you know, radio or TV in Utah means clearly they think that there's something that can happen in Utah. And Tim Kaine, the vice presidential Democratic running mate, said clearly, you know, we'd love to have this win in the Clinton column. But he's also happy just to deny Trump the 6 electoral votes that Utah has. That could mean Evan McMullen taking those Utah votes. But that means they don't go to Mr. Trump.
Right. And Evan McMullen is surging here in Utah in his own campaign. And that's an interesting point to note as well. Thomas Burr, Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune. I know that you've got to run, but thank you very much for joining us this morning. We're going to take our first break here. When we come back, I want to stick with the story of, we talked about the rebuke by the Deseret News of Donald Trump. I want to stick with newspaper endorsements when we return. Listeners, join us at 801-355-TALK. We'll be back after the break. You're listening to Behind the Headlines here on KCPW. Welcome back to Behind the Headlines, the Salt Lake Tribune Reporter News Roundup, heard on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. I'm Roger McDonough, joined in studio by the Salt Lake Tribune's Robert Gerke, Mariah Noble, and George Pyle. You can join the conversation commenting at the Behind the Headlines page, currently live at sltrib.com, or calling us at 801-355-TALK. And another quick thank you to Salt Lake Tribune Washington correspondent Thomas Burr, who had to leave us during the break. George Pyle, we talked about the rebuke of Donald Trump by the Deseret News. On Wednesday, the Salt Lake Tribune said that Hillary Clinton is the best choice for president. First off, how often does the Tribune do this? Is this something the Tribune does regularly?
It's a tradition with the Tribune to endorse in presidential races, Senate races, governor's races. At least it was for quite a while. And then my understanding is that we got out of that business for several years because publisher Jack Gallivan felt the need to do penance after having endorsed Richard Nixon. Mm-hmm. So we stopped. No endorsements. And then when Dean Singleton took over the newspaper, he looked around and he said, one, you guys need a Washington bureau, which he founded, and two, you guys need to endorse candidates. That's what newspapers do. Hmm. So we picked up again. And the first one was for the second term of George W. Bush. We endorsed him. And then both times that Barack Obama ran, we endorsed him.
Okay. Well, what does the Trib's endorsement of Hillary Clinton say? What's the reason for the endorsement?
The general focus is that these two candidates are night and day different in their qualifications, in their background, in their fitness for office. That Hillary Clinton has some baggage, as anybody who's been in public life for 40 years would have. She said some things we don't believe. She was really sloppy with her email server, although apparently it's starting to look like her server was more safe than the State Department's was. But it still was a dumb idea to have all that information on a separate server in this day of WikiLeaks. But her experience, her policies, which are numerous. I mean, you go to her website and she's policy wonk central. She's got a proposal for just about everything. On the other hand, Donald Trump has run a campaign based basically on bigotry and white nationalism. And that's the problem that a lot of Republicans are having, is that they don't want to be the party of old angry white men. They want their party to have a future. They want their party to be principled conservatives, which Donald Trump is not. So they're abandoning him. But our feeling was that Hillary Clinton is clearly qualified, certainly better qualified of the two, to be president. And other votes for independent and third party candidates, you know, you can understand that you feel like maybe you don't really want to vote for either one of those. But one of those is going to be president of the United States. And Utah is in play.
Right.
And you should make a serious vote. And our opinion was that the only reasonable vote is for Hillary Clinton.
Okay, well, that's one Salt Lake Tribune endorsement down. But there was also another candidate endorsement this week from the Salt Lake Tribune. Who was that?
Well, yesterday we endorsed Representative Milov for reelection. It was over Doug Owens, the Democrat.
Right.
We endorsed Doug Owens 2 years ago. We thought that he had better policies and better proposals. But we do tend to defer, I think, to incumbents. As Muhammad Ali used to say, you have to whoop the champ. Incumbents deserve a certain amount of deference unless they've done just something just horrible and made themselves just totally unqualified. And also, Owen's campaign this year struck us as a little bit hard to pin down. He was kind of trying to be a Utah Democrat. A lot of his proposals didn't seem to be all that different from what Milov was saying. So when in doubt, go with the incumbent, especially when she's such a history-making person, a black Republican woman from Utah.
Yeah. So big reader response to these endorsements? Have you had a lot of comments, hate mail, anything like that?
Well, Well, most of the comments have been on the presidential endorsement and the cancel my subscription. To which William F. Buckley once said, "Cancel your own goddamn description." Subscription. That's been most of the reaction. I think that a lot of people have been displeased with the Milov endorsement. We endorsed Barack Obama. We endorsed Hillary Clinton. I think there's an expectation that we'll endorse Democrats, and we like to be a little bit more thoughtful than that, than just go party line all the way down. And especially in a case where, as I say, we tend to show a little deference to incumbents unless there's some reason not to.
Oh, I don't want to leave this yet. I think newspaper endorsements have a long tradition in the United States, but they can seem to run counter to the independence of that a newspaper would that it espouses. Why are they done? I guess why do newspapers endorse candidates?
Well, my feeling has always been that you have 350 days worth of editorials that say we ought to do this about air pollution, we ought to do this about climate change, we ought to do this about defense policy, we ought to do this. And then when you come down to the decision that everybody gets to make the decision as to who might implement those policies, if you're silent on that, then that's the one day where you can actually make a difference, that people can actually go vote. And my kind of fear is actually any argument you could make against doing endorsements, you could make against doing editorials.
I don't disagree with Georgia, but the endorsements are also sort of a relic of when people bought newspapers because they wanted to be, you know, these opinion shapers in their communities back in the 1800s and so forth. And it was interesting. I mean, we've seen the Washington Post this week endorse Clinton. We've seen the Atlantic endorse Clinton, which is only the third endorsement they've made since slavery, I believe.
Yeah. Abraham Lincoln, Lyndon Johnson, and Hillary Clinton.
And so, you know, it's interesting to see the dynamics of this. I don't think there's a paper that's endorsed Trump yet. But
the National Enquirer.
I think Gary Johnson has more endorsements at this point than Donald Trump does. But But it, so it's interesting in that respect. Does it move opinions? I think it maybe
it
does, but I don't know that it's necessarily, you know, this mammoth tidal wave of
yeah. No, it's not. And we just like I say, we want to weigh in, give people the arguments pro and con. And I always say, you know, the only thing more arrogant than telling people that you can make them think a certain way is thinking that you should.
Well,
people will make up their own minds. We're giving them arguments, and we give them arguments in the form of an editorial that is an argument for a person or a proposition. That's the way we make decisions in this society, arguments and court arguments and legislatures, arguments in newspapers.
Well, and, you know, arguments coming from people who have been following closely the news for quite a while this past year, so it does have that weight behind it as well. You can check out the endorsements at sltrib.com. I've got politics overload right now, and so I think I'd like to take a break from it, though I will probably circle back around to it before the hour is out, as there's still more to cover there. But let's turn to you, Justice Reporter Mariah Noble. A few stories to get to from your desk, but I'd like to begin with a story that we covered maybe not thoroughly enough last week. A former Utah State University football player was arrested in California after charges of rape were filed against him. I think it was 4 charges of rape. The Tribune's reporting, some dogged reporting by Alex Stuckey, essentially led to these charges being filed. Alex appeared before a state committee yesterday trying to get access to some records from Utah State University. Mariah Noble, tell us what she was looking for and what happened in this meeting.
So she appeared before the state records committee yesterday, arguing for access to emails. And when she put in that records request from Utah State, it was a pretty broad scope of emails that she's looking for. They requested any emails from several staff members from 2009 to present mentioning Tory Green. Just that was the basis of it. And there was some criticism from Utah State because they said that those records are protected. A lot of them contain academic records, medical information, things that are supposed to be kept private.
So they want to deny the, they argued for a denial of this request based on the idea that this is private information and that could be contained in these emails. Alex had kind of a response to that, which was that they could provide the emails or the content of the emails, but with redactions involved, right?
Yeah, she did suggest that, and she said that the Tribune would be happy because they're not interested, frankly, in his grades, in his class schedule, things like that. Their reason for asking for those records was to find out whether the staff of Utah State University was communicating about those allegations made against Tory Green. We know that, well, in the story, Alex said that I think at least 3 had reported to the school.
So. And so the idea is what did Utah State do in the wake of those reports? And we don't know the extent of USU's investigations because they haven't shared that. They did say that they had fallen short, I guess, in their investigation.
Yeah, and that's the extent of the specifics that they said. All they said that their policies and processes, there were areas of those that fell short for these women who reported these allegations. They said also kind of in their defense that they'd conducted an inquiry into how they handled these allegations and then came up with several recommendations that they published on their website for how to improve their policies. But yet again, we're still kind of in the dark about what exactly happened after these reports were made. What exactly happened that made them fall short?
So, what happened in this meeting yesterday? This was a meeting of a state records committee, and they, you know, arguments were being made by Alex Stuckey, Tribune reporter, by USU, and what was the final decision there?
The final decision, the committee ended up deciding that those records, those emails that were requested, were in fact protected by this federal law, FERPA, and and that they didn't have the authority to mandate that their release, but they did encourage Utah State to release any records that they could while following that federal law. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So records request denied. The Tribune is filing an appeal to continue to seek records from Utah State University, not an appeal on this specific denial, but they're trying to get more records released or some records released by USU.
Yes, they're trying to get more records from that inquiry to find out what exactly went down among administrators and staff that resulted in, I mean, Torrey Green. He was not, it doesn't appear that he was disciplined. It doesn't appear that he sat out any games of the season.
Right.
So they're just trying to get to that.
Right. They let him play despite, after multiple women had come forward accusing him of sexual assault. And they have there's a Title IX requirement that they do investigate, every allegation of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what's happening there. Last I heard, we were still waiting for the extradition of Torrey Green from California to Utah. Do we have any further information on that? That's Alex Stuckey's question.
Yeah, I think as far as I know, he's still not in Utah, but I could be wrong.
Okay. Okay. Well, it's, again, fascinating story and a great reporting there by Alex Stuckey, also by Mariah Noble, and worth checking out. I want to stick with you, Mariah Noble, and let's turn to the story of Josh Holt, a Utah man jailed in Venezuela. First off, I guess for listeners who don't know the story, how did Josh Holt end up in Venezuela, and why is he imprisoned there?
Yeah. So he... Well, back in early June, he went there to get married to a Venezuelan woman. 2 weeks after their wedding, he was arrested by Venezuelan police on weapon charges. They said that, well, yeah, they accused him of kind of stockpiling weapons and
as part of a plot against the government. Is that
yes? Okay. That's essentially. That's the idea. So he was arrested. Also, his wife, his Venezuelan wife, was arrested about that time. And they have been imprisoned for almost 4 months now. Hmm. And Josh has had a couple of preliminary hearings set. One was about a month ago, and then this week. And both times his lawyer showed up to the courtroom, and there was a note on the door saying that, you know, that all court proceedings that day were canceled.
Hmm. Okay, so he's there and he's in jail. He met a woman online, a fellow Mormon. He moved down to Venezuela. He says because he fell in love with her over the internet. The Venezuelan authorities accuse him of trying to overthrow of being involved in this plot. Also, I don't know how this story got out there, but Holt was reportedly made to exercise naked in front of other inmates, I guess, to humiliate him. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what his mom told me on the phone, actually, the other day. She's received some letters from him and his wife, as well as just reports from embassy personnel, lawyers, that he was kind of targeted because he's American, as well as that the guards are kind of... The people at the prison, she believes, are kind of taking any opportunity to humiliate him, to mock him because of where he's from. And, yeah.
Okay. I want to remind listeners that you can call us with your thoughts and comments. We are at 801-355-TALK. You can also comment at sltrib.com. Mariah, Secretary of State John Kerry met with Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro in late September, and that gave Josh Holt's family some hope. But maybe with these failures of actually having a hearing happening, that hope might be a little bit diminished now.
Yeah, a bit. I think that they were pretty optimistic after that meeting. They felt like they had the president on their side, essentially. But the mom is under the impression that the judge, who hasn't shown up for these hearings, was kind of under direct orders from the government, to skip the hearing and not give him a fair chance.
You also reported that Representative Mia Love and Senator Orrin Hatch have been issuing appeals to Venezuela in this case. What are they saying?
They've been meeting with some federal leaders with Secretary of State John Kerry, and just trying to calling on embassy personnel down there and the Venezuelan government in particular to give him a fair shot to be released, to bring him home. They've been very public in their support of this and adamant about saying they aren't going to back down until this gets resolved.
You know, Venezuela's in an economic crisis. There's inflation. It's difficult for people to get basic supplies. And actually, I don't know if this is a question for you or maybe for George, but does any of that bode ill or does it bode well for Holt's case? Or does it not play a factor at all?
This is just me, but I'm sure it plays a factor somehow. It's hard to say. It's hard to say.
And relations with Venezuela and the United States are not necessarily great right now, and sure. I think that probably makes things a little bit bumpier too. So, it is interesting to see the highest levels of the U.S. government getting involved in this, trying to free this gentleman. I think there's some tension between the two nations generally, and so right. It probably makes things tough. And
if you're running a banana republic, it never hurts to be on the gringo a little bit to make you look better with your people, especially if things are not going well otherwise. I mean, this is a little bit of Guantanamo karma being played back, but it's sure. this guy is not to blame for anything they might be mad about.
Successor of Hugo Chavez there, too. Mariah, going back to you, we're now waiting to see when a new date for his preliminary hearing will be set. Is there any word on that yet?
Yes, there is. So that's going to happen on November 8th, which is about 2 months after the original preliminary hearing was supposed to be set, and, you know, 4.5 months after he's been arrested.
And we'll find out, we don't know what we'll find out, but we'll find out something at that time. Well, that's some great reporting, all available at sltrib.com. Mariah Noble, thank you very much. We're going to have to take a quick break. When we return, we will return to politics for a little bit longer. You're listening to Behind the Headlines here on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. We'll head to some messages, but we'll be right back. Welcome back to Behind the Headlines, the reporter news roundtable from the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm KCPW producer Roger McDonough, joined this hour by the Tribune's Mariah Noble, Robert Gerke, and George Pyle. Listeners, join us with your comments at sltrib.com or call us at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Well, in the final few minutes before we turn to our underplayed stories of the week, I'd like to turn back to politics, sort of. And back to Utah Republican Party Chair James Evans, actually. Robert Gerke, you reported this week on a complaint by the Utah GOP against the Democratic Party in Utah having to do with fundraising. What's this all about?
Well, so there's a ban that the legislature passed a few years ago that prohibits soliciting or receiving campaign contributions at the Utah State Capitol. And the PAC, the Political Action Committee for the House Democrats, had mistakenly put their Capitol office on I believe it was 9 email solicitations for contributions. And several of the candidates that received money from this PAC also put that money as having come from the Capitol offices. So James Evans has said that, you know, this is a clear violation of that ban on soliciting or receiving contributions at the state capitol. The Democrats said, well, no, it was a mistake. We actually didn't receive any contributions there anyway. So they said that no harm, no foul.
In terms of receiving contributions, does that mean in envelopes, you know, coming, being mailed to the Capitol?
The idea was to prohibit this sort of unseemly kind of where you'd have a meeting with a lobbyist at the Capitol and the lobbyist would then deliver a check. And that would be, you know, especially in the wake of the John Swallow scandal, they kind of wanted to separate the money and the policy side of things. And so for propriety and appearance purposes, they banned the contributions from the Capitol complex.
Okay. Is this, Evans wants the party to return a bunch of money because he says that, that those specific donations were tied or, you know, came to or through this capital fundraising.
Yeah, I believe it was something like $89,000 that he says they raised and about $51,000 that they gave to candidates through this PAC. And he says that they should return all of that money because there's no way to show that they did or didn't receive that money at the state capitol. And, you know, and this is just a rule, a legislative rule. It's not there's not a law prohibiting it. So, you know, it's not like there's somebody going to go to jail or get fined necessarily. But it is a rule. And I think James is trying to shame them into, you know, returning this money. And there is potential, I guess, that they could see some, you know, that there's a legislative ethics committee that could intervene.
Okay. Well, we'll see where that goes. Also, this week you reported, speaking of, I guess, kind of complaints against Democrats, federal prosecutors dropped charges against Donna Weinholz, the wife of the gubernatorial candidate Mike Weinholz. However, a Utah prosecutor does plan to file some charges against her related to medical marijuana or to marijuana in general.
Right. This has been sort of a fascinating case because it surfaced first back in April. Just a few days before the state Democratic convention, and Mike Weinholz said, you know, it surprised everybody, I think, when he was giving his speech at the convention and said, you know, by the way, my wife is under investigation for using marijuana for medical purposes. And so then it turns out the feds, she had tried to send some marijuana from her house down to California. The postal regulators got it. Feds investigated it. They decided not to prosecute it. They sent the case to Sim Gill, the Salt Lake County attorney. And he, because he's friends with the Weinholzes, had his chief deputy handle it. The chief deputy decided, we'll send it to Tooele County. The Tooele County prosecutor decided this week that probably next week they'll be filing a Class B misdemeanor of possession of marijuana against Donna Weinholz. Okay. And that will bring this thing to a close, I guess. I think it's like up to 6 months and $1,000 fine, but it's likely that she probably won't face anywhere near that kind of penalty.
What does she say? I mean, I know that this she says that she uses marijuana for medical purposes.
Yeah, she has bulging discs and arthritis and a degenerative back condition. And so she says she's used this for medical purposes because she doesn't want to get on opioids that were addictive. And she's had issues with other kind of pain relief medications. And so she said this is all that was really worked for her. She stopped taking it in April once the investigation started. And so, it was for medical purposes. And it's interesting. In the context of the gubernatorial campaign, you've got Michael Weinholz, who's in favor of legalizing medical marijuana. And then you've got Gary Herbert, who says, well, he wants to see the feds allow more research at the university level so we can get a better idea of whether, you know, so get some quality research to decide if this actually works before the state moves on that.
Is this a political liability for Weinholz? I mean, is it affecting the campaign at all?
Probably. I mean, you would have to assume not, because most of the polling data we've seen indicate that Utahns support this. And so support legalizing medical marijuana anywhere from, I think it was 54% to 70%, depending on which poll you're looking at. And depending on how the question's asked. But yeah, I think there's a majority of Utahns who support legalizing medical marijuana. And so I don't see this as necessarily being a liability for him.
How about polling? How is Mike Weinholz polling against Governor Gary Herbert? And actually, before we end the show, I'd like to get the latest polling data that we have on the presidential campaign.
Yeah. Weinholz is well behind, depending on what, roughly 30 points, depending on which campaign or which poll you're looking at. I believe the Tribune will have some new polls coming out next week ahead of the election. So we'll maybe have a better idea then. The Monmouth University released one yesterday. I believe he was down, I think it was 34, I believe. I can't remember.
Okay.
In the presidential race, there have been two new polls actually out just this week. The first poll done by Y2 Analytics had it tied 26-26 between Trump and Clinton. McMullen was at 20, I believe.
Okay.
And then the other one that came out just yesterday at the Monmouth University, they're a very reputable firm, or operation, I guess I should say, had Trump at 34, Clinton at 28, and I believe McMullen was again at about 20. I think he was 22 in the other one. He was 20 in this one. So what that shows really, I mean, is that, you know, somewhere in that
6 point. The margin is somewhere between tied and 6 points. You could figure 3-4 points depending on. But McMullen is within striking distance, and Clinton has had this ceiling, this sort of hard ceiling at about 26 the entire time of the campaign. And so McMullen has a chance to sort of slingshot past both Trump and Clinton at the stretch here.
And Clinton having a hard time breaking through, I guess that barrier of former Republican Republican Party voters.
Yeah.
Well, stay tuned. It's an interesting story.
Just a few weeks left. Yeah,
not very much left with these political stories. We're getting close to the end of the hour, and so we've got to turn to our underplayed stories of the week. Who is ready with an underplayed story? George Pyle?
Well, this is more of a doe story in honor of the 600th episode of The Simpsons. The UTA had a meeting the other day, and they hired some consultant to come in and tell them that they needed to have a culture of transparency, and they needed to do their work in public. Well, I've been telling them that for 12 years for free.
Where's your check, George?
Yeah, no, where's my check? If they wanted to know this, they just needed to read the Tribune, read the letters to the editor, read the comments. People don't think they're open and honest. And it doesn't matter if you are open and honest. It matters that people think if you're open and honest, and people don't. And I guess now that they have an expensive out-of-town consultant telling them this, maybe they'll listen.
We're in the wrong line of work, I'll say.
Mariah Noble, how about yourself? Do you have an underplayed story?
I do, yeah. So a subway worker, an 18-year-old subway worker who was accused and arrested on suspicion of spiking a police officer's drink in Layton. His name has been cleared. There is no evidence that he did that. So.
That's a really interesting story at sltrib.com. Check it out. Great reporting by Mariah Noble there. Robert Gerke, underplayed story of the week.
Just quickly, I think the one political race that isn't probably getting enough attention is this Christine Cantor, Richard Snowgrove County Council at-large race. Mm-hmm. It is one that is a pivotal seat that could swing either way, and so watch for that one down the stretch here.
And I know that County Mayor Ben McAdams come out along with a lot of others supporting one of those candidates.
Supporting Cantor, yeah. She got a number of endorsements from mayors around the valley.
Okay, that's Robert Gerke's underplayed story of the week. I'm going to go with a baseball story.
Yes.
The Chicago Cubs were down 5-2 to the San Francisco Giants heading into the ninth inning of what ended up being the last game of the division series. But in an epic comeback, they rallied in the ninth, scoring 4 runs and advancing to the pennant game. The historically losingest team in baseball is this year's winningest team. I come from a family of diehard Cubs fans, if you can't tell.
And maybe they're on trajectory to face my Indians in the series,
it's
right?
Let's
see how that goes.
It's either that or Nationals. We'll see how it goes. Or no, excuse me, not Nationals, the Blue Jays.
Yep.
All right. Go Cubs. That does it for our underplayed stories of the week. Robert Gerke, Mariah Noble, and George Pyle, all with the Salt Lake Tribune. Thank you for joining us on the show today.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We're going to wrap up this week with Salt Lake Tribune columnist Robert Kirby. This week, with an election looming, Kirby says that politicians aren't like the rest of us. And for him, especially in this cycle's presidential race.
Nowhere has this become more evident than in this particular race. Usually there's somebody in there that even if you don't want to vote for them, you can at least tell the sort of roots that they come from. And in this particular race, I don't think very many Americans have much in common with the two. One has always been fabulously wealthy, and the other one got rich in politics. This was a column that ran earlier last month, in September.
Right.
In it, I said that I don't trust people who only get into politics because they're rich enough not to have a regular job. Anyone so rich that they don't regularly take out their own garbage isn't someone middle-class America should trust. I have more in common with Mexicans sneaking in this country to provide better lives for their families than I do with a guy who wants to build a wall to keep them out. Note, in fairness, I probably also have more in common with a Juarez drug mule. Then there are people who accumulate wealth once they get into politics. People who do that can't really claim to be public servants. If they got rich while the average Americans they were supposed to be representing got poorer, then I say their heads belong on pikes in front of a dollar store.
Robert, so this is easy criticism to make, and it's one that people have been making, I think, for a long time about politics in America. You opine or you hope for a time when there's an American president who's more like the commoners, like ourselves.
Yeah, like us. Like, well, I say middle class because that's probably the largest class in America. Hmm. But how many of us could actually sit down in a room and have a conversation with these people about things that we share in common? Not many.
So, yeah, okay. So it's our own fault, you write.
Yeah, we keep electing them.
The other thing is that it's also encouraging or getting people into politics who, or maybe it's the parties, I don't know, getting people into politics who don't fit this mold.
I actually believe we'd better off if we held a presidential lottery instead of an election. You could get Ralph off the street over here to be president and probably do just as good a job, if not better, than the two of these people.
That's Salt Lake Tribune columnist Robert Kirby. You can find all of his opinions, the full Kirby archives, at sltrib.com. Coming up next here on KCPW is KCPW Presents Shakespeare in America, featuring Sam Waterston as narrator, and this is being done in conjunction with the display of a first folio of Shakespeare here at the Salt Lake City Public Library. If you haven't yet checked it out, you can find it on the fourth floor of the City Library, even if you want to make a trip down to Salt Lake and you're not listening in the Salt Lake Valley. Thanks very much to Jesse Ellis at KCPW, Tom Williams and Connor Rivers at Utah Public Radio, and the Salt Lake Tribune's Emily Means. You can find KCPW on Facebook at KCPW-FM. On Twitter, we are at KCPW. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks very much for joining us on Behind the Headlines, and we'll see you back here again next week.